most of those residues, hygroscopic, they're trying to pull water in through the coating. When they do that, they swell, creates quite a lot of pressure, which can often delaminate the film. And then, you know, that water is just going to keep, or that kind of damp ionic mixture is just going to do its thing in a little area that's delaminated under the coating. And yeah, we've all seen it. The coating can't do anything to protect against pre-existing contamination. It's, you know, I guess in some ways it's a filter. As you said, it's preventing bad stuff from the environment getting through. Everything's permeable to water, water vapor, you know, even metal over a long enough period of time. So really what you're doing is slowing down the failure mechanism. And, you know, I guess for a lot of people, as long as they can survive their warranty period, then that's good enough.
That's my guest. We'll be talking about conformal coating best practices next on Reliability Matters.
Welcome to Reliability Matters, a podcast for the electronic assembly industry. Each episode covers topics related to reliability, best practices, and environmentally responsible assembly techniques with insights from experts across the electronic assembly industry. Now, here's your host, Mike Conrad.
Phil Kinner has spent his entire career working with conformal coatings, including previous employment at Concoat, Humaseal, and PVA. Phil is a specialist troubleshooter and works to analyze materials and process failures. During his career, Phil has been instrumental in the development and commercialization of the first generation of UV-curable conformal coatings and has further undertaken the pioneering development of the revolutionary 2K conformal coatings. Phil is an active member of various IPC conformal coating task groups, a regular speaker at IPC and SMTA events, and is a member of the technical committee of the European SMTA chapter. Phil is also a nominated expert on the committee of IEC TC91WG2, that's a mouthful, requirements for electronic assemblies. Hey, Phil, thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here, Mike.
And welcome. You are not from the U.S., but you are in the U.S. right now. You're in Raleigh, North Carolina for SummerCom, IPC SummerCom. Is that right?
That's correct. It's been hot and humid and hopefully quite productive.
Late June in Raleigh. Yeah, it gets pretty sticky. And it'll only get worse as we head more toward the middle and end of summer. So you're actually here to relatively better time than it could be.
That's what they've all been telling me.
So again, welcome thanks for being my guest today. So tell me, you're with Electrolube. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where were you before Electrolube and what led you there?
So I've been in conformal coating more or less my whole career. I started off with company Concoat, who was the European licensed manufacturer for Humaseal. The Chase, the company that owned Humaseal, eventually bought the European licensing Concoat business. So then I became a Humaseal person. I was there until 2012. Had a couple of years out selling capital equipment for PVA. After I decided to leave the US and come back to the UK, and Electrolube, it's a company I've known for a long time, a competitor to Humaseal. We were talking, there was an interest, so it seemed like a good opportunity and to get back to materials and doing what I enjoyed. So that's kind of me in a nutshell, I guess.
Excellent. And I know that Electrolube has a vast, pretty wide product range. What types of products does Electrolube provide?
Basically, everything to do with electronics reliability, whether that's conformal coating, which I deal with, potting and encapsulation resins, thermal interface materials, cleaning media, and contact lubricants. Keeping switches functioning correctly, which is kind of where the business started 60 odd years ago.
Hence the name Electrolube.
That's right. But it does give some interesting Google hits.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine the type of what people are searching for and what they get might be two completely different things.
Correct.
With your company. Well, it is what it is. Conformal coating is vital in electronic manufacturing, and maybe not as vital in times past as it is today because of the expansion of IoT, Internet of Things, and automotive. We're taking electronic assemblies and we are carrying them into harsh environments, either on our bodies, in our clothing, or certainly with us. We're putting electronics in space and cars that go into harsh environments, down oil wells, and all sorts of nasty environments. So coating seems to be even more vital today than it has been even in the recent past. Is that observation shared?
Absolutely, Mike. It's kind of funny. Ever since I started in this business 20 odd years ago, people were telling me they were going to design coating out on the next generation of product. And you know, every year sales have gone up. So that hasn't really happened. And exactly as you say, electronics is going places where electronics have no business. The electronics have become more complicated, much more sensitive to corrosion and just even high levels of humidity, condensation. It kind of change a lot of the signal outputs, and the devices don't work correctly. So we see more and more opportunities in areas that I never expected conformal coating to be used. But then when they first put cameras in cell phones, I was kind of why on earth are people doing this? Why would anyone want that? And now I don't have a camera and I just use my cell phone for everything. So I guess in terms of picking future technologies, maybe I'm not that great, but it's becoming necessary to coat a lot of things that people historically wouldn't have coated.
Yeah, speaking of cameras, I read an article that stated the iPhone takes more pictures than any other brand of camera, more than Nikon and Canon and whatever, that more pictures are taken on an iPhone than any other form of camera. Yeah. Just to further your point, it's and I thought the same thing, like who, because the early days of flip phones with cameras, the cameras were pretty terrible. They made Polaroids look high def, right? And who would want a crappy little camera in a phone? And now, now our cameras come with phones more than anything else, right?
Looking around, phones are anything but phones really now, aren't they? You very rarely see people talking on phones now. It's tapping away at the screen and taking pictures.
Right. They're texting and Snapchatting and whatever they're doing. Yeah. Oh, and then occasionally it rings. What do we do with this? So I read one of your colleagues, Alistair Little's article on top five tips to protect PCBs from harsh environments. And I know it applied directly to coating, or sorry, to potting. But coating shares a lot of the same requirements that potting does. And coating and potting both serve to protect the board and therefore increase its reliability in the field. So what I'd like to do is kind of turn that particular article into a discussion about tips to protect PCBs from harsh environments as it applies to coating and potting. We don't have to exclude our friends in the potting side of the business. But there were several points brought up. And rather than read those points, why don't you take me through some of the reasons for coating and some of the best practices for coating?
Okay. In my mind, there's five genuine reasons for using conformal coating to protect the, and there are kind of a few of them are kind of somewhat similar, but slightly different. So, you know, corrosion protection would be kind of the primary purpose, you know, to prevent extraneous harmful materials from the outside environment getting onto the surface of the circuit board, where, you know, you've got bias, you've got probably some no clean process residues, and you know, mix in a bit of, you know, humidity or water, and you can see corrosion mechanisms being driven. A kind of slightly the same but quite different application is where we're talking about condensation resistance, you know, and I guess, you know, immersion resistance. You know, when you've got liquid water in significant quantities, rather than monolayers from humidity, then the corrosion mechanisms tend to go faster. They tend to, you know, on top of the corrosion issues, you've also got, you know, if the water's bridging, you know, two leads on an SOIC or a QFP, or, you know, you name the package, then there's a chance it's going to short, and, you know, the device is going to fail. So that would kind of be the second reason. The third reason, I guess, would be in you know, some enhanced dielectric protection, so enabling people to put components closer together than they would in air, which is important when people are miniaturizing electronics. Yeah, there's not many things that are getting bigger apart from cell phones.
That's right. We've gone full circle. We went from very large brick size phones to very small phones that I don't know how they were so small. There's a certain fixed distance between an ear and a mouth, and they tended to challenge that distance. And now the bigger, the better. It's kind of gone full circle, but everything inside of it is much smaller. There's just more stuff inside. So they may be physically large, but the boards inside are highly, highly miniaturized.
Correct. Then I guess the fourth genuine reason I see for using coating would be Tim Whisker mitigation. So there's hundreds of pictures on the NASA website. You know, Tim Whisker is a known phenomenon. Conformal coating is one of the mitigation strategies. And, you know, that really relies on all of the things we've been talking about, really rely on getting good coverage, good uniform thickness, and an adequate coating thickness to withstand the end operating environment. I guess, you know, that's kind of the four main reasons. And then the fifth reason would be, you know, a combination of all of those things. So in reality, you know, the coating's probably doing all of those jobs. So again, uniform thickness, coverage, making sure all the metal surfaces are well coated is really important for the coating to perform in all of those environments. I should say, you know, one of the working groups, the IPC working groups that's been led by Dave Hillman, has been taking a look at, you know, the typical coverage in a state of the industry kind of exercise, where they've had a bunch of boards coated with a variety of different, you know, regular coatings, regular processes, nothing special, nothing fancy. I think Dave was saying they'd done 25,000 cross sections or something, measuring, you know, minimum thickness, maximum thickness, and on a variety of different component areas. And, you know, I guess that's really opened some eyes. You know, people talk about 1 to 3 mils as a coating thickness. And, you know, we who do this have always kind of understood that's on a flat, unencumbered part of the board. Some of the designers are a bit shocked, but, you know, they're not getting, you know, 1 to 3 mils of coating thickness over the edge of an SOIC lead, or, you know, the top of a ceramic capacitor, or, you know, these kind of things. So I think coverage is kind of a combination of the material and the application process. And so that level of workmanship has kind of become into the spotlight a little bit, and it's becoming, you know, more and more obvious that, you know, if you want Tim Whisker mitigation, you need to have good coverage. If you want good condensation resistance, then you need to have really good coverage and really good thickness, you know, on those component leads to make sure that everything continues to function correctly. And I think that's kind of going to be one of the real challenges for, you know, the next few years as we move forward, is making sure that, you know, that we can kind of deliver that reliably as an industry.
Sure. Your comment a little while back about Dave Hillman and 25,000 cross sections reminds me of the adage, it's amazing what you see when you look, and it kind of brings the importance of inspection. How critical is material selection when it comes to conformal coating, and go through the types of conformal coating from acrylics to perlenes, anything that's in between?
I guess the main type, and I shouldn't know exactly how many there are, but I guess the main type, acrylics, silicones, polyurethanes, epoxies, paraxylene or paraxylene, to not use a trade name.
Right.
We've got a new class, styrene block copolymers, the most recent class, ultra thin coatings, which is anything less than 12 microns. So most of the kind of regular liquid coatings, we're talking normally 1 to 5 mils. There's a kind of nominal thickness range. The paraxylene generally, or paraxylene, typically 10 to 20 microns, that kind of range. And then the ultra thins, you know, there's a huge variety of different types of coatings. So some of them are nanometers in thickness, some of them are, you know, 2 or 3 microns. But to try and kind of classify them as one group, the committee decided that, you know, anything less than the paraxylene thickness was going to be called ultra thin. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. You know, the perfect coating doesn't exist yet. It's always a compromise. For example, I mean, paraxylene is applied in a vacuum chamber as a, you know, it's heated up as a dimer, it turns into a monomer, and then it polymerizes onto the surface of everything in the chamber. Very uniform, very well-controlled thickness, good barrier properties, really good coating. But the process is slow, the chambers are expensive, and, you know, it gets everywhere. So anything you don't want coated, you better make sure your masking is 100% effective, because otherwise, you know, your connectors are going to get coated with paraxylene, and then they're not going to work when you try and plug the next board or part in. Generally, you know, you're going to avoid the risk of masking. Coatings are so thin and so non-abrasion resistant that, you know, you can make a connector mating. Some of them are applied in a vacuum chamber, so, you know, slow process, expensive. Some of them are applied by dipping everything in a liquid, which is, you know, super easy. But the main issue with those types of materials is, you know, they're really designed to encourage moisture to bead off. If the board does get wet, then there's just not enough thickness, there's not enough dielectric protection there to prevent shorting between component leads and other areas.
Is that an attribute of all the ultra thin coatings, that they lack the ability to fully protect an assembly from large volumes of fluids?
I think that would be my experience. So, I mean, there's a lot of people making a lot of claims on the internet, various webinars and things.
Well, it's on the internet, it must be true.
Exactly. But, you know, my dad used to tell me that if something sounds too good to be true, then it often is.
Yeah, I think we all learn that the hard way, right?
So, you know, everything has its place, and it really depends on you know, what you're looking to protect against.
Okay, so let me take that, what you just said, and turn it into a question. I'm a customer, for the sake of this conversation. I'm a potential customer of some kind of conformal coating product, and I call you and I say, "Hey, Phil, I need to buy some conformal coating for my assembly. What questions do you ask me so that you can offer the proper material?"
So my first question would be, what temperature range is your board working in? Because if it's getting warmer than 150°C, and I'm sorry, I'm imperially challenged, so I have no idea what that is in Fahrenheit. but if it's more than 150°C, then it's pretty much going to be a silicone coating because of the temperature resistance. If it's less than 150, then everything's still on the table. After that, we'll probably talk about...
By the way, that's 302 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way.
Thank you. I'll try and remember that. That should be reasonably easy. Just double it.
See, my camera has a metric converter on it too.
you know, if we say the operating temperature is less than 150, all of the options are still on the table, then you know, we'll probably talk about what kind of environment we're really talking about. So, you know, if it's automotive and we're going through lots of thermal shock cycles, then you know, we need to keep that in consideration. If a consumer application, then kind of trying to understand what level of protection is going to be needed. So we'd ask questions about, you know, what kind of fluids or humidities, you know, how many times it's going to go through the dew point, just really trying to establish what kind of environment is important. You know, we talk about, is rework important? Because, you know, some materials are very easy to rework. So for a lot of military programs where, you know, they're looking for 25, 30 years of upgradability, then, you know, it's important that they can kind of rework the coating. For other applications, that's probably not so important.
What materials are the easiest to rework and what materials would be the most difficult to rework?
So the acrylics, acrylic materials, dissolve them in solvent, you know, they come off 5 minutes really cleanly, get the whole lot off, and you can recoat very straightforwardly. The hardest materials to rework, honestly, probably silicone materials. They're difficult to dissolve in solvent, and if you try and solder through them, because they're more temperature resistant, they tend to put up more of a fight when it comes to just soldering and desoldering through directly through the coating. And because they're generally quite soft, they can be a little bit difficult to abrade away. They kind of get sticky and gummy, and the kind of abrasion media tends to stick to it. So reworking silicones can be a real challenge. And then main, you know, polyurethanes, kind of somewhere in the middle. You know, some of them you can remove reasonably easily with solvent. Some of them you need some more aggressive solvents. When you solder through a polyurethane, you need to be a little bit careful about what's being burnt off, because you know, there can be some more hazardous byproducts of decomposition. So, you know, but you know, while we're talking about that, it's kind of the flip side of, you know, the level of protection you get. So, you know, acrylics might be the easiest to rework, but in terms of level of protection, maybe, you know, probably on the lower level of protection capability. So there's no such thing as the perfect coating yet.
Hence the pros and cons of every material. So you're going to ask people, when I ask, sell me something, what do I need? You're going to ask me where it's going, right?
Correct.
You're going to ask, you're probably going to be concerned about the harshness of an environment.
Correct.
It sounds like you're also going to ask me questions about, will I ever need to rework the product?
Correct.
Because some are more difficult to rework than others. What other type of considerations would your customer have to advise you of for you to recommend the correct material?
So then it sort of comes back to process. If they've got existing equipment, then we'd need to know what that was to make sure that what we were going to recommend was going to work in their process. So if they were using a dip tank, 50 gallons of material sitting in a dip tank, then that's open to the air, then choosing a moisture curing product probably wouldn't be the best move, kind of thing. If they've got robots, then we'd need to take a look at the board and try and figure out, you know, what kind of material was going to lend itself best to that coating process.
It's a vacuum deposition process.
We'd be thinking about cycle time.
And they have to do 100,000 boards a week. That probably is a deal killer right there, right?
Well, yes and no. So, you know, it depends. So, I mean, for many people, they want single piece flow. So it absolutely would be a deal killer. For other people, they're happy to rack up a bunch of whip. And, you know, if you've got a big enough chamber, then you know, you load it up once, let it run for 12 hours and spread that across 100,000 boards. And, you know, the cycle time doesn't look so bad. So it really depends on the factory and the way they work as to whether that's going to be an option or not. So cycle time, application method, curing process. So, you know, if they've already got thermal ovens, then maybe they want something that cures with heat. If they've already got UV curing equipment, then you know, chances are they're going to want a UV curable material.
If someone's applying conformal coating by hand with a spray gun, for example, do they have to specify a UV tint to it so they can inspect, or does that just come with all the sprayables?
Most of the materials contain fluorescent tracers. You know, some material, sometimes people specifically don't want a UV tracer because it can put a hint of yellow into the coating, which for some LED or opto devices can create some issues, wavelength shift. So yeah, that's kind of really a choice. You know, some people want materials that are opaque, you know, to try and hide the design of their circuitry or some other reasons. So anything's possible. You can have it, you can have coatings with, without, or deliberately, you know, opaque red, black, you know, pick a color. So everything's possible. In my opinion, I like, when I'm spraying, I like the fluorescent tracers. I find it, you know, very convenient to, you know, be able to see exactly what I've coated and what I haven't. Some people prefer spraying under white light, and that's okay. Some people prefer doing coating inspection under white light. Some prefer under fluorescent. So yeah, I think, again, you know, it's really down to the user and their preference, but all of those options typically would be available.
So I remember you may not have experienced this growing up in the UK. I'm not sure if this particular chain of automotive painters was in the UK, but when I was young, there was, and probably they're still in business, there's a company called Earl Scheib, and they would run TV and radio ads that they'll paint any car for $29.95, $30, they'll paint any car. And when I teach workshops, I show an image of Earl Scheib, and all the old folks in the room kind of laugh because they remember that ad. And then I show a car with paint just peeling off it. And I said, the good thing about Earl Scheib is if you have buyer's remorse over the color, don't worry. In 3 months, it'll just peel right off, because they really practice, at least for the $30 paint job. I would assume they practice no surface preparation. It was just paint it. And if there were contaminants on the surface of the old color, it affected the adhesion of the new paint and it would just peel off. And the same happens, or can happen, with circuit assemblies. When I teach my workshops, you know, we're talking about ways to avoid electrochemical migration. And electrochemical migration is the combination of three elements on a board. An electrical bias, so electricity, which obviously every board has, and a conductive corrosive surface, which could be contaminants left from the soldering process, like flux and board fab processes and component fab processes and human supplied contamination, all that in totality. And the third element is moisture. So, you know, if we can't prevent the electricity effectively, we can remove the moisture. And I ask everyone by a show of hands, you know, how do we prevent moisture? And everyone raises their hands and everyone says conformal coating. And then I have to be the bad guy in the room and go, well, you know, you're not, that's wrong. And a lot of people today even are surprised to learn that all conformal coatings are permeable to some extent. And they will all allow, over time, very small amounts of moisture, not enough to cause a short, you know, by connecting a cathode and an anode with a droplet of water as if the board was not coated, but just enough so that it could react with the conductive corrosive surfaces and the electrical current to form electrochemical migration. And we have, you know, plenty of evidence and photographs of dendrites growing under conformal coating. And so a lot of people don't realize that, you know, the purpose of conformal coating is to protect against fluid leaks and other environmental hazards contacting the assembly. But they will allow very, very, very small amounts of moisture in, just enough to create that effect, that ECM effect.
So you're asking, should I clean before coating? Yeah, I guess as a responsible supplier, making sure, let's use cars as an example. You know, when they manufacture a car prior to the paint application process, you know, they'll go to very great lengths to do acid dips, acid washes, to make sure that the surface of the metal is completely pristine before they coat it, to make sure that the paint goes on properly and it adheres properly and you know, performs properly and gives the corrosion protection that is expected. Yeah, so the responsible person here says, I would absolutely say a clean surface prior to coating going to reduce the number of problems. You know, I understand that there's a lot of issues. I don't need to tell you about issues with cleaning and, you know, what happens if you partially clean and no clean and yada, yada, yada. But if we make the assumption that the cleaning process is good, well under control and doing what's expected, then of course that's the ideal situation. On top of that, you know, many customers use plasma to kind of etch the and activate the surface and give the coating, you know, a really uniform surface to adhere to. So that's kind of what I'd like to see in the perfect world. In the world that I live in, I wouldn't even want to hazard a guess at the split, but you know, I would say the majority of boards that are coated are, you know, not cleaned. There's no special surface prep. It's kind of our job to deal with whatever contamination is on the board before we coat it. And go back to the car example, it's like taking that brand new chassis, driving it around a field, and then putting it on the paint line and expecting to get the same pristine finish that we got from the you know, all the acid preps that people were using before. So I'd like to see cleaning. I'd like to see plasma.
Several years ago, I consulted on a civil litigation matter where an OEM was suing their contract manufacturer, basically for doing exactly what they were told to do. The OEM suggested that they should have known better. but the premise was they had a part that was backed up by a battery. This particular assembly ran off a battery and would be buried in the ground and send signals to an adjacent receiver on a utility pole. And because the board was going to be buried under the ground, they thought it would be a good idea to pot the board. And so they potted it in black silicone, you know, at least an inch high. They floated it in this plastic assembly and then just filled it with potting compound. And they didn't clean their boards. They didn't remove any of the flux. They had they didn't bake their boards out either prior to potting. But they thought everything was okay because they're gonna pot it. So that was their get out of jail free card. And it turned out they created this sarcophagus of it was like King Tut and all of his possessions, you know, entombed in this potting compound. And what they did is they sealed in the sins of the process into the assembly. And although moisture did not penetrate inch thick silicone, that part was accurate. There was enough moisture already in this multi-layer board to combine with the contamination, the residues that were on the board. And they actually had conductive anodic filament failures and dendritic growth and corrosion within this potted part. And they thought they were protecting it from the outside world. They were really making sure the bad actors couldn't get out, that they were locking them in the same room and they all had a fight with each other. So, you know, that is a to me, a great illustration of, you know, you have to prep the assembly in order to protect it further through the use of conformal coating or potting. It's kind of garbage in, garbage out.
Absolutely. You're never going to get me to argue with you on that one. You know, and most of those residues, hygroscopic, they're trying to pull water in through the coating. When they do that, they swell, creates quite a lot of pressure, which can often delaminate the film. And then, you know, that water is just going to keep, or that kind of damp ionic mixture is just going to do its thing in a little area that's delaminated under the coating. And yeah, we've all seen it. The coating can't do anything to protect against pre-existing contamination. It's, you know, I guess in some ways it's a filter. As you said, it's preventing bad stuff from the environment getting through. Everything's permeable to water, water vapor, you know, even metal over a long enough period of time. So really what you're doing is slowing down the failure mechanism. And, you know, I guess for a lot of people, as long as they can survive their warranty period, then that's good enough. But, you know, the risk is always there, you know, and I guess, you know, process variations, you know, you might get a bit more flux some days than others. And, you know, you might find that some boards fail a lot faster than you'd expect. So, you know, it's very much a risk.
So where do you see your industry, the coating industry and the electronics industry in general, 5 to 10 years from now? Do you see a trajectory or what's your prediction?
Based on my cell phone camera prediction, I think, everything that's made is going to, there's going to be more and more electronics. They're going to do more and more things. They're going to be more powerful. They're going to be smaller. You know, they're going to need to be lighter. So I think, You know, one of the things I see is housings and the quality of the housings becoming increasingly less robust. I see electronic going ever goofier places. I see coating really going.
Is goofier a technical term?
Well, that depends.
I like it. We're putting electronics in goofy. There's the headline for there's the title for this episode. Electronics in goofy places. I love it.
So I think, you know, for me, I see coating going in two kind of opposite tracks. I see the ultra thin materials becoming more common for lower value consumer goods. Perhaps you could argue whether $1,000 iPhone is a low cost or a low value consumer item. But yeah, and then I see for kind of more industrial and more automotive, I think that the coatings are going to become thicker. I think they're going to, because, you know, the coverage, that we talked about earlier, to get enough coverage and enough thickness to deal with reduced quality housings, to do with increased risks of humidity, condensation and immersion kind of conditions forming. So, you know, I see it's inevitable that the coatings are going to have to become a little bit thicker in order to deal with those challenges.
Very good. Phil Kinner, Electrolube, thank you so much for being my guest today. You're a wealth of knowledge when it comes to conformal coating. I really appreciate you being here. How do people get a hold of you if they just say, I need to order some conformal coating from Phil, or I need to talk to Phil about my process? How do they get a hold of you?
They can look me up on LinkedIn, or they can send me an email at phil.kinner@electrolube.com.
Electrolube, not to be confused with any other stray search term. So, Phil, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a thrill.
It's been a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
Well, that's another episode. Thanks for listening to Reliability Matters. If you like what you hear, please be sure to give us a like. Just click the like or heart button below. If there are any reliability-based questions you'd like to have answered or specific topics discussed, let me know. I can be reached at mike@mikeconrad.com. That's Conrad with a K. Don't miss another episode. Subscribe to Reliability Matters on iTunes or follow us on Spotify. You can also listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, aqueoustech.com, pcbchat.com, spreaker.com, or our newest affiliate, Ascendo Reliability, on reliability.fm, a site dedicated to all things reliability. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode of Reliability Matters. In the meantime, keep doing it right.
Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Join us on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for new episodes of Reliability Matters.